Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Earlier this month, police and FBI agents invaded two spas in Bennington as part of an investigation into human trafficking and prostitution. Earlier this year, Senator Patrick Leahy added an amendment to the Violence Against Women Act to reauthorize the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. In 2011, Vermont passed a law against human trafficking and set up a human trafficking task force. More than 500 victims of human trafficking were confirmed in the United States between 2008 and 2010. Barbara Whitchurch is the chair of the Vermont Human Trafficking Task Force and the public education coordinator at the Vermont Center for Crime Victims Services. She joins me now. Barbara, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Now, human trafficking in Vermont, that those two phrases don't tend to go together very easily in people's minds. So what might that even look like?
Well, actually, that's probably the first response I get whenever I bring up the issue of human trafficking is people will say, you mean it happens here in Vermont? And to that I say, yes. You know, we don't know the exact extent of this crime here. And one of the main reasons that we don't know it is because the nature of the crime is to be so hidden. Survivors are afraid to come forward. There are no coordinated systems for gathering data as of yet. So we have to speculate about the extent of it in the state, but I would say that it's more than we think. We have anecdotal information from people who are working in domestic and sexual violence programs that they are seeing survivors of sex trafficking, for example. Every time I make a presentation, inevitably someone will either raise their hand or come up to me afterwards and say, you know, now that I know what the descriptors are for being a victim of human trafficking, I do believe that I have worked with someone recently, or someone has come into my office, or I've had some kind of contact with someone who fits that description. What should I do?
So people are actually telling you, once they start to learn what human trafficking is, that they think they're coming into contact with victims of it here in Vermont.
Yes, that's right.
You mentioned prostitution. Are there other ways that human trafficking is occurring here?
Trafficking is basically divided into two distinct categories. One is sex trafficking and one is labor trafficking. And they can be, a person could be victimized in both of those ways at once, but generally for the purposes of service providers, we tend to look at them as two separate categories. There's also the trafficking of organs. And I don't know that much about that in Vermont, but what I can tell you is that we have had quite a lot of contact from people who work with young people in Vermont saying that they do believe that either sex trafficking or what we call survival sex, which is trading sex for either a place to stay or drugs or food or other necessities, is definitely happening here.
Is that still considered trafficking, that necessity sex?
It's different in each state depending on the state statute, and it's somewhat debatable in our state, but I would say that we should err on the side of caution and assume that there might be a controller involved in a situation like that rather than just strictly something voluntary.
And then that's a key, right? A controller, somebody who is controlling the behavior of another person. That's one of the keys here to what human trafficking is.
Yes, that's correct. It's the two elements. One is control, and which we use the terms force, fraud, or coercion in the statute, which are all means of control or trickery of the person involved. The other is that the person cannot leave, so that's the enslavement aspect of it. So that the person is somehow forced, tricked, cajoled, misled into the situation, and then finds themselves in a situation that they cannot escape from. And the other element is the element of financial profit. So if another person is profiting from the activity of the enslaved or trafficked person, that's one of the keys to constituting trafficking as well.
Now, you sometimes hear in this country about trafficking occurring in the agricultural industry. Mm-hmm. Is that something that could be happening here as well?
It could be. Again, we don't have any hard statistics, but as you know, there are quite a few hundred undocumented workers working on dairy farms across the state. And these people are especially vulnerable because of their undocumented status. So they're, in general, afraid to go to the police if some sort of abuse is occurring or if they become the victim of a crime because they're afraid of being deported. That creates a sort of vicious cycle in which, you know, people know that they're unlikely to report to the police and therefore more vulnerable to being victimized. And so, you know, it's kind of a bad cycle that's there. It's almost like a ghetto situation. So I would say that it's a situation that's ripe for trafficking and abuse. We don't have any hard statistics on that at this point.
Let me ask you just quickly as well on I think what sometimes people think of as more, I guess, traditional trafficking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is the Canadian border a problem? Is there some cross-border traffic coming, passing through Vermont to maybe more urban places that we should be aware of human trafficking possibly happening as well?
I would say yes to that. Vermont traditionally has been a corridor that for drugs and guns, and it's been, you know, as far away as Florida to Canada, with Vermont being the border state that people pass through on their way. That being said, I think that the state police and the federal agents are very aware of this, and often we see survivors who have escaped from rings or cartels that are, you know, moving through Vermont. They've escaped in Vermont and sought haven or, you know, refuge here, either in a domestic violence program or with another agency.
So, Barbara, you mentioned a few minutes ago that people tell you they think they are seeing victims of human trafficking, and you've been working to train people who might come into contact with those victims, or I suppose as well, perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people like social service workers, child and family services employees, domestic violence coordinators.
Yeah.
What should anyone be on the lookout for, and what should they do if they think they may see somebody who's in trouble?
Okay. If you are in a position to help, I would say that one of the things to look for is someone who's running away from home. That's one of the strongest predictors of the vulnerability to what we call child sexual exploitation. So there's a very strong correlative link between runaways and becoming a victim of sex trafficking if you're a young person. Another thing to look for is unexplained absences from school, someone who has an older boyfriend, a sudden possession of expensive items or manicures, pedicures, hairdos, clothing, or also being depressed, suffering physical injuries. Any of these unexplained or sudden changes in appearance or behavior are very strong warning signs that a young person might be a victim of sex trafficking.
And then they should call. There's a Vermont hotline, but also a national hotline.
Yes. The Vermont hotline is 1-888-98-HUMAN, H-U-M-A-N. And that will link to the Williston Dispatch. And they are specially trained to field calls about human trafficking. There is also the Polaris hotline, which is a national hotline.
And we're going to link to both of those at vpr.net, so nobody who wasn't able to write that down has to worry. We've been talking about human trafficking, how to be on the lookout for it in Vermont, with Barbara Whitchurch, who's the chair of the Vermont Human Trafficking Task Force. Barbara, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you for having me, Jane.